your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to have quite an interesting program today. First, I'm going to start off with Dick Allgaier. He is the host of a site called CryptoViewing.com, and he gives us a description in his own words, in his own opinion, of what the Supreme Court really is, and he calls it the temple. And then we're going to get into some really good views by Robert Barnes and Alex Holm on the choice that's coming up for the replacement of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who just recently passed away. So here we go with Dick Allgaier and his description of what the Supreme Court really is. Here we go now.
The Supreme Court is in the news, and it's going to be in the news for a while here. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court. Now, this is not going to be a political segment because this is way above politics. But anyone who is appointed and elevated to the level of a Supreme Court justice should be acknowledged. So we acknowledge Ruth Bader Ginsburg. To be able to preside, to be in a position of authority in that temple, means you understand the system and you are part of the system of administration that goes back many, many centuries. In fact, it goes back many civilizations. So let's look at the U.S. Supreme Court, the architecture of the building itself. And now let's look at a famous Roman temple. And now let's look at a famous Greek temple. U.S. Supreme Court, Roman temple, Greek temple. The Supreme Court is a Greek temple honoring the same gods in the same symbolic way. The architecture of the temple is a representation of society and governance. If we start at the bottom, you have stairs, many, many stairs. This represents the place where the common man, the citizens, the residents reside. It's a long way up to the place where the laws are handed down. The pillars uphold the higher realms. You've heard the term, he is a pillar of society. Well, yes, pillars represent various fields of knowledge, pillars of society, pillars of education, pillars of finance, banking, columns, pillars of medicine, philosophy, government, and law. Law is one of the columns. It is one faculty, one of the pillars. You see, the entrance to the temple is behind the pillars. Not everyone can enter and conduct business in this temple. And above the pillars, you see the statement, equal justice under law. That's an important statement, equal justice under law, which means there is equal punishment from those above who own this place. If you're talking about law, the lawgiver is the owner. The owner has the right to everything. You can see the light about two-thirds of the way up the columns. Many temples like this have torches near the top because as you work your way up the pillars, when you get to the higher levels of medicine, banking, education, philosophy, government, and law, you reach the light and you become illuminated. Above the columns is a pyramid. The pyramid is where the gods reside. In the case of the Supreme Court temple, you can see nine figures inside the pyramid. Notice the one holding the fascia, the bundle. That's a bundle of 12 sticks with an axe. That represents the combination of the 12 families to combine their endeavors in order to have a better impact on the world with their hatchet. One stick can break easier than 12 bundled together. The 12 families working together throughout history can make and enforce the law. These are the people who are atop the pillars. They're closer to the heavenly realm. This is the end of the physical scale represented in this edifice. The heavenly realm is integrated into some ancient temples. You can see the representations of things above the pyramid. Back to our building here in America. You call this the Supreme Court. It is a temple for high priests and magi. Only certain lawyers can go in this temple. You have to have a certain standing in your faculty. There is a meaning in this architecture. There is a lineage. It's right there for you to see. The battle for who is allowed to put on a robe and go inside this temple will be a good show, but it won't affect those who ultimately control the temple. You notice conservative justices Roberts and Gorsuch have ruled not for conservatives, but the way their masters have told them to rule. Oh, there I go. I'm getting into politics. This is above politics. This is a direct lineage illustrating the administration of our world through the centuries.
We have a whole system of governance. You could say that came out of Babylon. Some people would call it the Babylonian slave driving system. And I can sympathize somewhat, a little bit, with protests out there in the streets over this system of justice or something that has evolved. You'll see the fasci symbol not only in the Senate, but you'll see it in the House of Representatives also. And it's a bundle of around an axe, and it symbolizes that their strength, togetherness. And that means that when the Supreme Court justices act together, or the justices act together, the court, the judiciary system acts together, they have a lot of power. Now we have this choice coming up of Barrett, LaGuardia, or Rushing, or someone else. And Robert Barnes has expressed the best opinions of anyone that I've listened to, along with Alex and him interacting back and forth. So here we go next with Robert Barnes expressing his opinions about the upcoming appointment of a new justice for the Supreme Court, with Alex giving some great contributions too. Here we go next.
All right, I want to get constitutional lawyer Robert Barnes, good friend of mine, really smart historian, his view on what's happening politically right now, 39 days out from the election, the Soros groups, the funding, the head of Twitter, Jack Dorsey giving $11 million to the group, seeing the head of the group handing out the riot shields and the defund the police stuff, and then two cops shot, and then Senator Paul saying this is terrorism, to try to block people's political views, to try to scare them, to try to make them submit. He read the definition of terrorism in the Senate about an hour and a half ago, and we played the clip three times, but Congress keeps acting like they don't know who funds BLM or Antifa. Soros is in the New York Times bragging about it. So I wanted to get Robert Barnes' take on that ahead of the situation with the Supreme Court and some of his concerns and some of the inside baseball he's going to give us. But Robert, good to have you with us.
Hey, glad to be here.
Let's get your gravitas on 39 days out, what you see happening, what you think about these BLM riots, where you think that's going.
I think there's sort of a twofold set of concerns. You do have sort of a rise of they're weaponizing the mob on the political left side of the equation. And that's an issue. And they're trying to take out Trump by creating this sort of chaotic atmosphere that they can blame on Trump. But I think we also have to have a parallel concern about the rise of a certain sort of, statist agenda on both the left and the right. Like, if we look at what happened in Germany in the 1930s, how Nazis came to power, they had three things in their favor. First, they used a sort of excuse of the rise of a violent left, the communist left. The fascists used that to help seize power, to legitimate their seizure of power. Second, they used economic collapse and a quote-unquote emergency to assert power politically. And then legally, the key aspect was there was, quote, an emergency exception to the Weimar Constitution that was used by both first the corporatists and then the Nazis to seize power legally. And so we have to be cognizant of anyone that's pushing any of that kind of agenda. So I think we have to have parallel concern of protecting the president and seeing him reelected. And I think there's great opportunities to see that happen despite all the shenanigans and scams that are taking place. But I think there's power afoot and movements afoot within the government on the statist side of the equation that would like to use the pretext of the violent left and the pretext of the pandemic to seize extraordinary power.
Well, that is my next point, is that when you see people going, how do we counter this? We have no laws. If you had the Irish mafia, the Italian mafia, any mafia out beating people up, blocking businesses. Back when pro-lifers would block abortion clinics, I thought they had a right to do it as civil rights activists. They would charge them under racketeering. Okay, well, maybe that was an overreach. That was the left, though. It's clearly racketeering if Antifa won't let people go into a university to give a speech, or if Antifa goes out and tears up businesses or BLM and says you can't have dinner because you're white. Imagine if a bunch of whites came and told a black restaurant you can't have dinner. Clear civil rights violations. Clear racketeering. You're the constitutional lawyer. Rand Paul, Trump keep asking what tools they have. Well, the Justice Department must be smoking dope or something. There's plenty of tools right there.
Absolutely. And I was telling someone the other day, do we really believe the FBI doesn't have any informants inside Antifa or BLM? Do we really believe that law enforcement has not infiltrated these organizations at all? Look at Christopher Wray. Wray has been coming up with excuses as to why they don't need to take action. He's been shifting the worries and concern to some supposed racist groups that don't really exist in any major quality or quantity anymore. So we have to ask ourselves, why is the government responding in certain aspects the way
they are?
Exactly.
I'm going to interrupt again. In the middle of murders every day, cops being shot, people dying every day, baseball bat attacks, machete attacks, burning checkpoints, total insanity, we're told white supremacist number one threat. I don't give a rat's ass about white supremacists. They were doing this, arrest them. But no, that's just a cover. It's a big sick joke.
Absolutely. And I think it raises concerns that if we go back to COINTELPRO and how they infiltrated the Black Panthers and ended up redirecting the Black Panthers.
But you don't need to even infiltrate these people. If I was funding groups nationwide to block entrances and attack things and do all this, I'd be arrested.
Oh, exactly. And that's my point. In other words, I can't imagine.
Yeah, we don't need new legislation. We have it all. So people listen to you, Robert. What should the FBI do? What should local governments do?
Well, they should have been cracking down on this a long time ago. And they should start cracking down on it immediately now. And the fact that they're not, raises concerns to me, because I don't understand why there hasn't been broad scale, wide scale investigations and indictments already. There have been some by Attorney General Barr, but there haven't been nearly enough. And when Christopher Wray says he doesn't even consider them really a high priority, that's the big problem. The big problem is not the failure of the laws on the books. It's the failure of Christopher Wray at the top of the FBI to prioritize going after Antifa and BLM. All the means to do so are already present.
Why do you think Soros and all these criminal Democrat groups think BLM and Antifa are going to be successful? Because they look like clowns to us. They're doing terrible things, but they've succeeded in other countries. I think that's why they're so confident.
Well, I think it's back to the old. Well, I think they win either way. Because if they can use the rise of the violent left to excuse various forms of a sort of over-response by the state of restricting our liberties in a different context that doesn't really relate to Antifa or BLM, they can use them as the foil the same way the Nazis did. You can remind people of the Reichstag case of what happened there. The perception of a dangerous radical violent left.
They claimed a mentally ill communist burned down the Capitol, so Hitler took total power, and turned out the Nazis did it themselves.
Exactly.
But in this case, it's not Trump doing it. It's Soros. But you're saying for a larger globalist aim, because they want to get rid of freedoms, period, which we know the Democrats want.
Exactly. I think they can win either way. Trump is the only obstacle to their objectives. But I think they can either use the violent left to actually seize power or use the violent left as a foil to increase their power on the other side.
So is Trump right to not take the bait of the agitprop, let them go wild and crazy, which then only politically hurts them? Did he take the third way? Was he right about that?
Partially. In other words, I think what he wanted was the FBI and the Justice Department to do a lot more. He's right to be hesitant to have military on our streets and to legitimize that. But his real hindrance is that the FBI has not been following his directions that they meaningfully criminally investigate and prosecute on a much broader scale than they've done, especially the institutional funders and facilitators of this activity. People don't randomly show up with U-Hauls with tools and equipment to commit random violence within an hour of a grand jury indictment in Louisville unless somebody with big money and big influence is backing it and supporting it. And that's where the indictments are not coming. We've seen some good indictments on the street level. We're not seeing indictments against the funders. And that's what the president has called for. But the big hurdle is that Christopher Wray at the FBI is the one blocking it. is the one stopping it. And I think that's where the concern has to be, that the president has done everything he can do, but there's people within the institutional apparatus of the government that are resisting it. People within deep state control of the law enforcement and police infrastructure that's precluding it from happening at a meaningful level. That's the problem. Christopher Wray is the big problem.
That's right. And let's talk about the Durham investigation, where it's at. Let's talk about handicapping this whole thing coming up with the Supreme Court. Robert Barnes, straight out of Alex Jones, NewsWars.com. Robert Barnes is here with us. Look at these headlines. Trump says Supreme Court will decide the election, needs a ninth justice. It's constitutional. He's moving forward. But then the Atlantic comes out and says Trump campaign is reportedly discussing contingency plans to bypass election results. So the Democrats are going to challenge the election when Trump wins. When he challenges that, they're calling it bypassing. We'll get Barnes's take on that. Republicans hope Supreme Court fight boosts Trump's reelection bid, helps GOP hold Senate minority. So you can see what's true and what's not. When Trump says it's out of his mouth, that's what he really stands for. But, behind the scenes, he thinks he's losing. No, he knows the Democrats are planning to contest. So should we take how they're planning, in their own words or your view, the Democrats to contest it, what you think Trump should do, or hit the Supreme Court first? Because they both are obviously intertwined.
No doubt about it. The president needs a fifth vote that is on his side, and a fifth vote that will actually clear nomination, and a fifth vote that will vote against the lockdowns. Because right now, whoever replaces Ginsburg will decide whether or not there's an emergency exception to the Constitution moving forward. The capacity for militia law and martial law completely depends upon a justice that is pro-lockdown existing. And right now, with Ginsburg gone, there is a 4-4 split on the lockdown. And so that's important, and co-equal to that, given that the Democrats are clearly going to contest the election, the president needs a fifth vote on the Supreme Court prior to the election occurring, so that they can be there, and he needs the best possible nominee.
And I agree with you. The fact that they keep promoting this particular lady as the lady makes me suspicious. So I called you last week, and I couldn't get you on until now, and you made your concern of the problem. So let's talk about that.
Absolutely. Judge Barrett would be a disaster. She has a way above average chance of being denied nomination because of a range of controversial comments and decisions she's made while she's been on the bench, and previously comments about deferring to the Pope in cases of a conflict between a judge and the Catholic Church, comments involving about a lot of pro-government, pro-prosecutor decisions that have been made, pro-corporate decisions that have been made, so that she open season for the Senate to deny her potential appointment, and then the president doesn't have his critical fifth vote. The second problem is she is the most pro-lockdown judge that could possibly be nominated in the country. She just cited a decision that was in favor of the lockdown. She enforced the Illinois governor's lockdown against the Republican Party's challenge, the Democratic governor's lockdown. And most frighteningly, she cited the Jacobson decision. And the Jacobson decision.
Yeah, but a record just skipped. Go back. She's siding with Democrats to keep the lockdown going. Please continue.
Absolutely. So what she did is she is the most pro-lockdown judge that could possibly be nominated. She voted with the Democrats to keep the lockdown in Illinois. She cited the Jacobson decision, which is the forced vaccination decision from 1905, which was used then to justify forced sterilizations in the Buck decision in 1925, which was then used to justify detention camps for the Japanese Americans.
That's right. That
in
set
1944.
Up the first health departments in the 19s and the 20s, and that was the sterilization, and that led to the camps. You're absolutely historically right.
Exactly. So Jacobson is like the Plessy v. Ferguson of integration. That was the decision that established segregation in America, or the Dred Scott decision that led to the Civil War.
Or Jim Crow.
Or exactly, Jim Crow. So all of the Jacobson.
So they're all pushing her like liberals don't like her, but that's just like the Federal Reserve financed articles in 1913 against the Federal Reserve, so conservatives would be for it. And I trust you. I've looked those cases up when you told me that this weekend. Hard to believe it's been that long since I learned this. I should have been talking about it, that this particular judge is literally the lockdown judge. That is not good.
Oh, it's terrible. And I think she is not a reliable vote at all. She's helped game the system. She comes from the old money South. She comes from the sort of hierarchy. She's a part of groups that have kind of are like Opus Dei in their approach. So this comes, she comes from an authoritarian perspective. In fact, she's been one of the most authoritarian oriented judges of any judge in the country the last 2 years when she's been on the bench.
How did she become the top of the list? Just because the media said so?
Federalist Society. So the same people who put Chris Wray into the FBI, the same people who put John Roberts on the bench are trying to put Barrett on the bench.
I've been worried about the Federalist Society and that computer list. Trump was going off that till 2 weeks ago. He's added some new names, right? Where do you get those names?
Yeah, so he demanded that they add names several weeks ago that he published, and that included Barbara Lagoa, that included Alison Rushing. So if he wants to nominate a woman, Lagoa has a great life history, great life story.
Yeah, that's the lady. Tell us about her. That's the lady you think's good.
Yes, she's Cuban-American, so she personally, by her life experience, knows the danger of statism, the danger of communism, the danger of radical state power, that her family escaped Cuba. That's her life history. She stood up pro bono for Elian Gonzalez when a lot of people told her not to. She refused to go the judicial clerkship government service route, been on the state bench in Florida for almost a dozen years. Conservatives across the constitutional spectrum find her to be a fantastic judge. This includes Matt Gaetz, who's recommending her, sort of a populist congressman from North Florida. Governor DeSantis, been one of the few people to stand up against lockdowns and refuse to do extensive lockdowns.
And has she been vetted heavily, though? We don't.
Yes, so she's on the 11th Circuit, has been there for more than a year. She's the one who refused to recuse herself and said there were.
And so she was just not got vetted, as you were telling me this weekend. She just got vetted.
Exactly. And in fact, because of her background, she kind of has like a Clarence Thomas type background. It's hard for Democrats to criticize her without coming across as anti-Cuban, anti-Hispanic, anti-immigrant, anti the American dream. So that's why, like, she.
Again, all I care about whether she's got what between her legs or whether she's Cuban or whatever, I just care about her voting record. What's the voting record like?
Voting record is a consistent constitutional conservative over 10 years on the Florida state bench and while she's been on the 11th Circuit. She's the one that refused to allow felons to vote until they had paid their fines. That's led Bloomberg and LeBron James to talk about paying off
their
fines.
I was about to say, how can they do that when that's obviously paying for votes? That's a felony.
As long as they don't precondition it on voting, they can legally get away with it. They have to pay everybody, but they can't discriminate. They can't only pay people who promise to vote. They can't offer an extension for a promise. So it depends on how
listen,
it's
everybody's
done.
Everybody's heard the other name. Let's say this lady's name over and over again. Tell you're a really smart guy. I trust you. Tell her name over and over again. When you get this name to Trump, tell us who we should get to be the Supreme Court nominee.
Judge Lagoa would be his best political choice. Would lock up Florida. She has the highest likelihood of passing the Senate. She'll be the best vote for him to protect against election fraud.
And she countermanded that commie Sotomayor.
Exactly. I mean, she comes from the anti-communist tradition. She breathed it. She lives it. She understands it. She's still a conservative Catholic. She's comes from constitutional roots. All of that. You get all of the benefit without any of the baggage. She hasn't signed off on
anything. She's not going to make the Catholics mad if we get rid of the other lady. And she's conservative. And she's Hispanic. And she's a patriot. So, yeah.
Exactly. So the second best choice would be Judge Rushing out of the Fourth Circuit. She's made great rulings on every constitutional liberty, probably the most pro-constitution judge in the country. First Amendment, Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Sixth Amendment, all of them she enforces. She's willing to call out corrupt police, corrupt prosecutors, corrupt politicians. So she has a more extensive and better record. But Lagoa has been good on every decision she's had the opportunity to make. So Lagoa is the best political choice. Rushing is the best sort of intellectual choice. Barrett is the disaster. A disaster because she may not even get make the bench, and then Trump is unprotected.
Well, by the way, I looked that up, and I saw that. She really said she'd defer to the Pope? You can't do that when you're a federal judge.
Exactly. She wrote a law review article. It was her first law review article that she wrote. She said that if a Catholic judge has if the Catholic Church says something is wrong, then the judge has to recuse themselves. And that was in death penalty cases. She was saying a Catholic judge could not enforce the death penalty conscientiously. That is not someone we can trust to be on the Supreme Court.
Well, it'd be one thing if it was Pope John Pius II or somebody. Well, this new Pope, he's a damn communist.
So Lagoa, according to Robert Barnes, is the best political choice, but Rushing is probably the best intellectual choice. But I just hope it's either Rushing or Lagoa not this Barrett lady. But anyway, coming up next is a conversation that Alex also had with a couple of men that get into the funding of this bail system, the bail bondsman system out in Louisville. And it happens that the woman that's a member of that a board of directors member, I believe, is the one that was seen handing out all that shields and equipment for rioters and protesters out in Louisville. So they tell us how this is funding, and they get back to Soros and others. Listen to this. These two gentlemen they came out with a story and in-depth went down and drilled down in there as to who's funding this stuff. Here we go now.
Bail project tied to Antifa, U-Haul, received millions from Bill Gates, UMG, Jack Dorsey, among others. So everybody's shocked by this. It's a fact. So I'm glad you guys dug into it with this particular group. There's so many others. And we're joined here by Jack Hatfield, investigative journalist with National File, and at Jack Hatters on Twitter is how you follow him. And of course, Tom Papert, Emperor Papertine, needs your introduction. Guys, thanks for having us. Tom, you're the expert on this particular article. Bring us in and introduce us to Jack Hatfield.
Well, so we started following this in the moments after that famous video now, Alex, of the U-Haul truck delivering shields, bottles of water, masks, umbrellas, all kinds of rioting supplies. And it just was such an anomaly. You know, why is there a U-Haul in the middle of a soon-to-be riot that we now know led to two cops getting shot? Well, it turns out there was a woman involved who rented this U-Haul. We now know who she is. We now know her background. She is employed by the Bail Project, which is a globalist initiative to do away with the concept of bail, period, in Western civilization. She's called a bail disruptor for these people, and she also runs her own little social justice causes, and she was at Charlottesville in 2017, so she has quite a history. Then you look into the Bail Project. You know, how is this woman paying her bills? I know if I was going to pay for a U-Haul, I would have to do it with the money I make here at my job. The Bail Project has ties to Soros. It is funded by Jack Dorsey. Bill Gates has done fundraising initiatives. And Jack Hatfield, I just have to say, you've done a fantastic job putting this together. Maybe you can break down how this sticky web is tangled together.
Yes, well, there was a we found from this from the Twitter account IntelWave, Intel.wav, and the guys with the Third World Fight Club, who are this group of concerned citizens who first tracked down Zola, and then a number of these fundings then came from them, and then we were able to dig then even deeper. So the first thing we found was that Twitter's CEO, Jack Dorsey, helped donate $11 million to organizations that included the Bail Project. Him, along with an organization started by Rihanna, which is the Clara Lionel Foundation, donated $11 million to these organizations to advance racial equality with the focus on criminal justice and policing reform. So that was the first sign of real proper funding that we got. Then after that, next, it turns out that not only was it Jack Dorsey, but it was actually you, the American citizens who had been funding it with up to $1 million in federal coronavirus relief funds. You know, these funds were supposed to go to hardworking Americans and small businesses to keep them going through this pandemic. But no, between $350,000 and $1 million in these federal relief funds went to the Bail Project. And then after that, the big kicker. This was the one that really started then getting attention. There was some more digging done into the direct funding of this organization, and we found there was something called the Audacious Project, which was something that was linked together with various funding sources, including the TED organization, a.k.a. the guy behind TED Talks, and the Bill Gates Foundation donated around $406 million to various organizations, and in fact has been donating up to $50 million a year just to the Bail Project. Up to $50 million. You know, why do they need all this money? Where is this money going? Well, we can see now because it's funding these Antifa rioters on the street.
That's right. It's just like darkness and horse manure produces mushrooms. They're producing dead cops and burning cities.
Yes, exactly.
Better, Alex.
Oh.
Well, and of course, now we're seeing more of this come out. I mean, it's and obviously, Alex, you brought up a good point in that we knew this. We know that they work together. We know that it's concerted. We know that this doesn't happen in a vacuum. But never before have they accidentally tipped their hat like this, where because one woman made the perhaps foolish decision and against her hierarchy, her betters, to go out and rent this U-Haul and do it so publicly in the middle of broad daylight with cameras rolling, now we're able
she
to see
cut the
exactly
intermediate
who's involved.
Out. We actually got a colonel at the grassroots instead of just a private.
Exactly, exactly. And so now we can see exactly where the money's coming from, how they organize. So as you said, Alex, this is not just a foot soldier. So this woman was on the ground in Charlottesville in 2017. She was reported in the media as a victim with a broken leg from the horrible, as Joe Biden says, white supremacist KKK attack where they come out of the trees holding tiki torches. Obviously, there's no video of this. There is video of her. There's audio of her admitting that she was the one who rented the U-Haul, but denying it was used to break the law. There is,
even though we have the video, listen, guys, by the way, I want to be clear, because once I said it, it sounded like I was taking away from your groundbreaking deep research that you and Mr. Hatfield came out with. No. I just meant people get punished for talking about it on the news. Tucker Carlson, they just announced, is being censored. Facebook's going to throttle their page back. So they're going to, it's called throttling it. Now, shadow ban didn't exist, but now they have a new term for it. Facebook throttles official Tucker Carlson page with reduced distribution 40 days before election. It's all here. That's a National File article. It's all happening. But that's new, and I meant to mention that. The fact that they got COVID money and the fact that all these other conservative or normal people with real businesses, farms, auto parts stores, little factories, restaurants, I know family can't get any of the money in the last 8 months. But all the big people like Bezos, $33 billion. So I salute you both. Stay with us for several more segments, gentlemen, because I want to give you guys the floor and go through all this. Listen, listeners.
These riots and these protests are very, very well coordinated and planned. And we're getting more and more of a hold on. In fact, there's been discussion now in Congress and as to who's funding this, who's behind this, and so forth. And we've done a lot of research and development on Tides Foundation and a lot of others that have been funding a lot of these radical groups through the Alliance for Global Justice and out of Tucson and other groups. So anyway, what we have is the actual recording. A man phoned in to this lady that was distributing that and disguised himself, passed himself off as a U-Haul worker, and was asking her about what she was hauling around and so forth. And she actually, confessed to what she was doing in distributing this stuff. But there are some solid parts in this. I didn't edit this audio at all. So we'll just wait through there. I think she leaves the phone when she's talking to him and then comes back a minute or so later. And then she clams up, I think, maybe. She got on to him. And it goes like that. But she did admit to the one that distributed this stuff, and you'll come up.
So Leah Short, Christina Geraldo, Sarah Schneider, Internet Reservation, DG010377. I don't know if you know any of these numbers, but the call log sheet of people who have talked to me today, it says, scheduling text message was successfully sent to this phone number. Pickup date on this time. Customer was texted a customer confirm access link. Customer called in stating he saw someone driving this equipment and are rioting and property damage. Not true. That's absolutely not true. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of Twitter posts about this customer renting a contract using the rental under this number used to protest illegally. Not true. We handed out supplies. That's it.
So you handed out supplies and that was it?
Yes.
What kind of supplies were they, Harley?
Since then, umbrellas, water, masks, goggles.
Nice.
Gloves.
Holly, from what I've seen, people have been sending us, and we've been getting absolutely flooded, Holly, with calls. They're saying, uh-huh, we saw signs of people saying, abolish the police. defund
sure.
the police.
Sure, that's my First Amendment right.
Yeah, I get it.
What does it matter what I wrote on a sign?
I get it. I'm not saying you're in trouble. I just want to make sure we're kind of clear because, like, we have no clue what's going on. I'm sure you have no clue what's going on. It's your First Amendment right to peacefully protest. And once again,
I
that's
didn't even
peaceful.
Protest. I just drove a U-Haul truck and dropped items off.
You just drove a U-Haul truck and dropped items off, Holly?
Excuse me?
No, I'm saying, is that what you... No, I didn't hear you breaking up. Is that what you just said? Holly? Holly, are you there? Are we good? Holly, did I lose you?
I'm sorry. You're going to have to talk to my lawyer.
I have to talk to your lawyer?
Yeah, I'm not going to answer any more questions.
Yeah, you're not in trouble. I'm not the law enforcement. Like, I'm nothing to do with them. I'm just calling on behalf of U-Haul because we have no clue what's going on. I mean, you're not in trouble with us. Like, if you were, like you said, you're dropping off supplies, which is completely, you know.
It doesn't make any sense that all these people got my name because there's, like, and they have, like, they're tweeting your guys' internal call logs. Like, it seems like somebody from U-Haul is giving them this information. And I'm going to tell you, that's a really big problem.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that.
I mean, I literally am holding in my hand a screenshot of y'all's call logs. Like, your employees' call logs. In what they said when they talked to me.
I have no clue.
Breach of security.
Yeah.
This is a huge breach of security.
I'm not going to comment on that. I have no clue what happened on that employee's front. I'm just trying to get, like, a grasp of what happened
like
on this truck.
It's five different employees who talked to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Leah Short, Christina Geraldo. Who are all these people? These people entered stuff that now is all over the Internet.
I mean, didn't you take that risk by going out there with a U-Haul truck and passing out supplies to protesters?
No. I mean, I would assume that U-Haul would never give away my information. Why would you do that?
Yeah, I have no clue, Holly. I have no clue.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like, do you have a supervisor I can talk to?
I'll be honest. I'm not with you, Holly, but I do wish you well.
Yeah, I didn't think you were.
I know inciting rights is a federal crime, Holly. I do wish you well, and I hope you have a night's rest of sleep. Like, just take care, Holly, okay? I love you.
Here's some more information that Tucker Carlson came up with earlier this week. On Kyle Rittenhouse, a young man that's charged with murder out there in Kenosha. Anyway, some very, very good details. Here we go next with that.
Welcome to Tucker Carlson tonight. Last month, much of the city of Kenosha, Wisconsin burned to the ground. No one expected that to happen. Kenosha was not a hotbed of unrest. It all began very suddenly when police tried to arrest a man with a long criminal record called Jacob Blake. Blake was wanted on felony sexual assault charges. Blake resisted arrest. He fought with police. They tasered him. He kept resisting. And then, apparently, police say he reached for a knife. Police then shot him in response. Blake survived, but the city did not. The media immediately described Blake's shooting as racially motivated. There was no evidence that was true. There still isn't any evidence that's true. But riots broke out in response as if on cue. Mobs of Biden voters destroyed businesses and churches. They torched car lots and furniture stores. What had been a peaceful middle-class city was destroyed. Here's what it looked like. This went on for days. Hamstrung by local politicians, police did little to stop the destruction. A small number of citizens decided to fill the vacuum. One of them was a 17-year-old from suburban Chicago called Kyle Rittenhouse. On Tuesday, August 25th, Rittenhouse finished his shift as a lifeguard in Kenosha. Video shows he spent part of that day cleaning graffiti from the walls of a local high school. Rittenhouse then went downtown with a rifle to try to protect a car dealership that had been attacked by mobs the night before. What happened next destroyed Kyle Rittenhouse's life. It also ended the lives of two other people. Kyle Rittenhouse apparently shot three people total, two of them fatally. His attorneys argue that Kyle Rittenhouse acted in self-defense. Prosecutors in Wisconsin charged him with first-degree murder. So what is the truth about what happened that night? This is one of those rare cases when we might be able to reach firm conclusions about that before the trial. There was an enormous amount of video shot that night in Kenosha, mostly by citizens with iPhones. We have video of all three of the shootings Kyle Rittenhouse was involved in. Critically, we also have video of the moments that preceded those shootings, the context. We've already showed some of that video to you, but tonight we're going to show you more. New, never-before-seen footage of Kyle Rittenhouse in Kenosha. Now, what you're about to see comes from the nonprofit Fight Back that was formed by Rittenhouse's defamation attorney, Lynn Wood. For the last month, there's been an enormous amount of propaganda surrounding this case, and virtually all of it has come from the left. Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts, for example, denounced Kyle Rittenhouse as, quote, a white supremacist domestic terrorist. Now, there's no evidence that is true. There never has been any evidence. It's a lie, so far as we know. So the question is, what else are they lying about? Tonight, we're going to show you context from that night, and we're going to let you decide what happened. Here to begin is video of Kyle Rittenhouse hours before the shootings took place. Now, again, what you're about to see comes from a group, a nonprofit, founded by Kyle Rittenhouse's defamation attorney. Here it is.
To prevent the total destruction of their community, Good Samaritans united to guard local businesses. Among them was 17-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse.
So people are getting injured. Our job is to protect this business, and part of my job is also help people. If there's somebody hurt, I'm running into harm's way. That's why I have my rifle, because I need to protect myself, obviously. But I'll let my men kill.
Earlier that day, Rittenhouse volunteered to remove graffiti from Reuther Central High School in Kenosha.
That was the day, and then night came. Kyle Rittenhouse found himself in downtown Kenosha in the middle of a riot. He wound up face-to-face with a convicted child molester called Joseph Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum was there protesting on behalf of BLM. Apparently, he was committing arson. What happened next between the two of them is graphic, but if you want to understand how Joseph Rosenbaum died that night, it's important to see it. Here it is.
Joseph Rosenbaum is seen starting more fires. Around that same time, Kyle Rittenhouse is spotted running with a fire extinguisher. With his face concealed, Rosenbaum emerges, chasing after Rittenhouse. A single gunshot is fired by a protester, identified as Alexander Blaine. From this angle, we see the muzzle flash of Blaine's handgun. Seconds later, Kyle Rittenhouse is pinned between parked cars. Directly in front of Rittenhouse, armed with bats and other weapons, a mob is forming a barricade. With no way out and no way to know who fired that shot, Rittenhouse turns to face Rosenbaum. Kyle Rittenhouse fired four shots. Seconds later, three additional shots are fired by an unknown shooter. One bullet grazed Joseph Rosenbaum's head. Another penetrated his right groin, his left thigh, and his back. With a total of eight shots fired, it remains unclear that all four of Rosenbaum's wounds were caused by Rittenhouse.
So, to restate what we know, Kyle Rittenhouse fired four shots initially that night. Another four were fired. We still don't know who fired them all. No one else has been arrested or charged. At this point, the mob turns on Kyle Rittenhouse. They assault him. It's clear they plan to kill him. Kyle Rittenhouse runs. They follow. Rittenhouse trips and falls. They attack him. He shoots. It's all on video. Watch.
Hey, what are you doing? You shot somebody?
An unidentified protester strikes Rittenhouse in the head, knocking his hat off. Rittenhouse trips and falls to the ground. Another protester attempts to jump on Rittenhouse, who then fires two shots into the air. With blunt force, another protester strikes Rittenhouse in the back of the head with a sharp edge of a skateboard, then reaches for the rifle. Rittenhouse fires a single shot, striking the man in the chest. A third protester fakes as if he's surrendering, then suddenly advances with a handgun aimed at Rittenhouse. A single shot strikes the man's right bicep. While visiting him in the hospital, a friend of Grosskreutz posted the following photo and statement on social media. I just talked to Gage Grosskreutz too. His only regret was not killing the kid and hesitating to pull the gun before emptying the entire mag into him.
So that's what happened that night in Kenosha, August 25th, 2020. It's on camera. You can assess for yourself what you think of it. As we said, as of tonight, only Kyle Rittenhouse has been charged in those shootings. Turns out there was more than one. So the question before the court is, did Kyle Rittenhouse commit first-degree murder, or was it something else? Was it, as his lawyers say, self-defense? Judge Jeanine Pirro is the host of Justice with Judge Jeanine on the Fox News Channel and the author of Don't Lie to Me and Stop Trying to Steal Our Freedom. She has studied this video, and we're happy to have her on tonight. Judge, thanks so much for coming on. You've studied this. You've, of course, spent a lot of time in courtrooms. What do you make of it? What does this add to what we know about what happened?
Well, first of all, thank God for the video. It puts truth to the lies and light to the darkness. What, you know, the media grabs onto a narrative, irrespective of what the facts are, and they repeat it over and over, and they don't care about the lives that are ruined in the meantime. But what this video shows is a clear demonstration of, at the very least, a need for self-defense. And I think the DA in this case should be very worried. In fact, that he would be able to bring charges, all of these charges, in less than 48 hours is very disturbing. How could he possibly interview all the witnesses? And everything about this case suggests that Kyle went there to help. He had no intent, and they claim that he's part of a militia. He's a vigilante. He's a white supremacist. He's none of that stuff. He went to help. His intent is clear in everything he says and does. He says, I'm coming here to help. And then after the first shot, when he's being chased by Rosenbaum, who is furious because he's putting out the fires and he mistakes him for someone earlier, he then stops and he's got a decision to make. He's got a bunch of people in front of him with bats and weapons, or Rosenbaum, who's threatening him. And he turns around and Rosenbaum ends up getting shot. We still don't know if Kyle did the kill shot because we can't get the autopsy or the ballistic reports yet. But if you move on to the second shooting, what you realize is this kid is not a mass murderer. There were several times he could have continued shooting. Twice he shot in the air. Once he turned around and the guy put his hands up, he didn't shoot him. He kept moving. He put his hands up. He tried to get the police's attention. He tried to call the police for help. Everything about what he said and what he did indicates that he is not someone who went there with the intent to kill. Now, what this DA should recognize is this. There is no shame in exonerating a defendant if he is not guilty. In fact, a prosecutor's job is to make sure that we do not wrongly convict the innocent as much as it is a job to make sure that we convict the guilty.
Let me ask you two questions. One, the only reason this was going on in the first place, these riots were occurring, is because politicians in Kenosha pulled the police back and allowed them to happen. And into that vacuum moved people like Kyle Rittenhouse with firearms. So the politicians in Kenosha are responsible for everything that happened that night during the riots. They allowed it to happen. When are they going to be punished for that?
Well, you know, they're not going to be punished, but this is an example of what can happen to anyone, because when the police stand down, and in this video you see there's a lot of action, yelling, fires. The police aren't putting the fires down. The police are down the street if you watch this video.
Right.
This young kid is putting a fire out. Another person is putting a fire out. And, you know, whether the police were told to stand down, they're all Democrats. That's what we know. The mayor is a Democrat. The DA say as a Democrat. And this can happen in any town to any one of us when the left comes in with lawlessness and we're simply trying to protect our property. Kyle Richardson, Rittenhouse has been villainized here and he's been demonized. And I think it should be just the opposite. Thank God for the video and the fact that we're able to identify what went on. And what's curious, Tucker, is the fact that just about everybody here has a criminal record, and I understand that one person's name is not truly his name, it's an alias, and his real name suggests he's got a rap sheet a mile long. These are people with guns coming to protest, looking for trouble. This young kid is an innocent man. He's looking to help. He's, you know, he's all American, and he's trying to just make sure his town is safe.
Meanwhile, the guy who pointed a gun at him and later said he wanted to kill him has not been charged with anything, which tells you a lot about how justice operates in Kenosha. Janine, Piro, great to see you.
That's right.
Thank you.
Coming up next is a researcher, and it goes way back in the early 1900s, and he's going to give us some background on what's been going on about this plan or this plot or whatever to bring world communism to the whole world. Here we go next with that.
The question of how and why the United Nations is the crux of the great conspiracy to destroy the sovereignty of the United States and the enslavement of the American people within a UN one world dictatorship is a complete and unknown mystery to the vast majority of the American people. The reason for this unawareness of the frightening danger to our country and to the entire free world is simple. The masterminds behind this great conspiracy have absolute control of all of our mass communications media, especially television, the radio, the press, and Hollywood. We all know that our State Department, the Pentagon, and the White House have brazenly proclaimed that they have the right and the power to manage the news, to tell us not the truth, but what they want us to believe. They have seized that power on orders from their masters of the great conspiracy. And the objective is to brainwash the people into accepting the phony peace bait to transform the United States into an enslaved unit of the United Nations One World Government. First of all, bear in mind that the so-called UN police action in Korea, fought by the United States, in which 150,000 of our sons were murdered and maimed, was part of the plot, just as the undeclared by Congress war in Vietnam, in which our sons are dying, is part of the plot, just as the plot against Rhodesia in South Africa, in which our sons will be dying, is part of the UN plot. However, the vitally important thing for all Americans, all you mothers of the boys who died in Korea and are now dying in Vietnam, to know is that our so-called leaders in Washington, whom we elected to safeguard our nation and our Constitution, are the betrayers, and that behind them are a comparatively small group of men whose sole objective is to enslave the whole world of humanity in their satanic plot of one world government. Now, in order to give you a very clear picture of this satanic plot, I will go back to its beginning, clear back in the middle of the 18th century, and name the men who put that plot into action, and then bring you down to the present, today's status of that plot. Now, as a matter of further intelligence, a term used by the FBI, let me clarify the meaning of the expression, "He is a liberal." The enemy, meaning the one-world conspirators, have seized upon that word liberal as a cover-up for their activities. It sounds so innocent and so humanitarian to be liberal. Well, make sure that the person who calls himself a liberal or is described as a liberal is not in truth a red. Now then, this satanic plot was launched back in the 1760s when it first came into existence under the name of the Illuminati. This Illuminati was organized by one Adam Weishaupt, born a Jew, who was converted to Catholicism and became a Catholic priest. And then, at the behest of the then newly organized House of Rothschild, defected and organized the Illuminati. Naturally, the Rothschilds financed that operation. And every war since then, beginning with the French Revolution, has been promoted by the Illuminati, operating under various names and guises. I say under various names and guises because after the Illuminati was exposed and became too notorious, Weishaupt and his co-conspirators began to operate under various other names. In the United States, immediately after World War I, they set up what they called the Council on Foreign Relations, commonly referred to as the CFR. And this CFR is actually the Illuminati in the United States. And its hierarchy, the masterminds in control of the CFR, to a very great extent, are the descendants of the original Illuminati conspirators. But, to conceal that fact, most of them changed their original family names to American-sounding names. For example, the true name of the Dillons, Clarence and Douglas Dillon, once Secretary of the U.S. Treasury Department, is Lepowski. I'll come back to all this later. There is a similar establishment of the Illuminati in England, operating under the name of the British Institute of International Affairs. There are similar secret Illuminati organizations in France, Germany, and other nations, operating under different names. And all these organizations, including the CFR, continuously set up numerous subsidiary or front organizations that are infiltrated into every phase of the various nations' affairs. But at all times, the operations of these organizations were and are masterminded and controlled by the internationalist bankers who in turn were and are controlled by the Rothschilds. The details of how they accomplished the setting up of the CFR in the United States, as also in the other nations, are far too voluminous to be described in this dissertation. But you can find it complete in News Bulletin number 122, entitled UN is Spawn of the Illuminati, and News Bulletin number 123, entitled CFR Completely Unmasked as Illuminati. Both are published by the Cinema Educational Guild, Post Office Box 46205, Hollywood, California. You can get them for 50 cents per copy by writing to that address. Those news bulletins reveal the names of the original founders of the Illuminati and the Americanized names of their descendants in the present CFR. Now I'll go back to the activities of the original Illuminati conspirators. As revealed in News Bulletin number 122, one branch of the Rothschild family had financed Napoleon. Another branch of the Rothschilds, both branches, the real masterminds of the Illuminati, financed Britain, Germany, and the other nations in the Napoleonic Wars.
This is quite fascinating, but I played it tonight to give you, our listeners out there, some background into what's really been going on throughout the world. You got to look back at the Fabian Society in England. And even before that, there was communistic or humanitarian, you could say, writers and authors in the 1760s in France that gave rise to much of this thought about a transformation of the whole world into a world communist state, you could say. But what's been going on now, you've got a global corporate fascist group that's beginning to dominate. So it's not... The overall plan is not too good for the average world citizen at all. So thank you very much, and God bless each and every one of you, and good night.